El nuevo Crispy Chicken Sandwich de McDonald's es...
crujiente, tiernito, jugoso.
Es pollo en la McDonald's, un mordisco y...
¡wow!
Es el nuevo Crispy Chicken Sandwich. Ordena por anticipado en el app de McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
En McDonald's, participantes.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Sports Summit Podcast here on Shooting the Sports-ish, where we're the $160 million show. That's just what we are now. That's the contract we've signed. We're completely worth it. Please don't look at the numbers or anything else. We have our own intro now.
Holy moly.
I know it, guys. Well, that's what happens. That's what $160 million gets you.
Yeah. We set up everything to talk about a number of things before the show, and 2 minutes before we come on.
Yep.
This craziness of Dak Prescott reportedly been offered a $5 million, $175 million extension.
Nothing of what you just said made sense.
No.
It says Dak Prescott has reportedly been offered a 5-year, $175 million extension, asking for $45 million for the fifth year of the potential deal, making $40 million a year. What, $75 the first year, Chris?
$75 million in year one, $66 million on signing.
You that tell is, me.
That's per Schefter, too. That's not us just.
Yeah.
And Schefter is the man. You know he knows.
And yeah. No trade, no tag clauses.
We were talking about this last week, guys. I'm not hating on Dak Prescott. I do not dislike the man. I love the young man. I think he's great.
I actually like him.
He's a damn solid quarterback, but that's what he is. He's a solid quarterback. That makes him the number two paid quarterback in the NFL.
Okay. All right. So I'm wrapping my head around $75 million in 1 year, and I just can't get there, and my head's going to start hurting.
No.
So, okay, half their secondary is up for contract negotiation.
Gone.
Yeah.
You're spending $75 million on one guy. I guess the signing bonus doesn't count towards the hard cap, so maybe they're only spending $9 million on him?
All I know
Either way.
All I know is that makes him have the highest average salary in a single year, the second highest, behind Leo Messi, who's making $168 million a year, which is ungodly. But Patrick Mahomes is making $41 million, so that makes Dak number two on this list.
The Cowboys before today had just under $18.5 million worth of cap space to work with. So let's assume that the signing bonus doesn't go against the hard cap, right? So now they're down to $9 million in cap space this year.
Yeah. The guaranteed money still counts against the cap, but not in the way it other goes. So it counts against the cap, but not as like traditional salary.
Okay, next
against the cap.
Next season, per game, Dak Prescott makes $4,687,500 per game.
Okay, we really have to take a look at this now in the scheme of, like, I'm getting tongue-tied because I can't believe.
Okay.
In the scheme of the division. So Dak gets paid, Alex Smith gets let go, but you're still in a division where the Cowboys aren't the best team in that division, are they?
No.
Washington won the division.
They're not even the top two teams.
But even knowing that Dak is back, and even knowing that Zeke is healthy, I mean, everything rests on what they can do with that secondary. If they can't bring anybody in their secondary back, Dak can throw for all he wants, but we don't know who Washington's quarterback is technically. I mean, we know who's on the roster, but we don't know who their
my man's on the roster.
Is.
Heineke as of right now.
My man's on the roster. He's the only one.
I'm saying we don't know for sure. Like, it's not day one. It's not week one. That's what I mean.
Right.
But I still think Washington's a better team.
Okay. I do too.
Yes, they are.
Dallas is just leveraged, as far as I'm concerned. They've leveraged their future. Okay. Now they've given them no room to move just to lock in Dak Prescott. They're already weak on the back end in their defensive backfield, and now they can't sign him. They're screwed.
Okay, so I figured it out. I found it up. So this is the example. You sign a five-year deal for $15 million at signing and a $5 million base salary. You take the 15, you divide it by 5, that's $3 million per year. You add that to the base salary, you're $8 million against the cap. That's your cap hit. Okay. So Dak, his signing bonus over 4 years is $16.5 million. So it's $16.5 million plus his 41 base salary. His cap hit is $57.5 million.
Over 4 years?
Except it probably goes down because they're saying the first year he is up is worth $75 million. So, but roughly $57.5 million.
Okay, I think, and again, we should reiterate this. We, I believe the three of us, I'm going to speak for all of us, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. We are pro the athlete getting their money. I would never hate on the athlete for getting a money. However, certainly, that doesn't free you from criticism. Right, player being a proponent of players doesn't mean that takes away from the ability to criticize what happened. But wow, he's making Dak Prescott is making $40 million a year.
It's a scary amount of money.
Is that the market or is that Jerry's market?
That's Jerry's market.
That's Dak having leverage and Jerry wanting to keep him at all costs, and Dak knowing if I ask for it, I'm probably going to get it. So wait. This tells you how much money was he actually asking for? Because they said they had to come down a little bit.
He wanted between 43 and 46, from my understanding.
Well, he's getting paid 75 in year one, so I think he's fine.
Jesus. I think he hit the number he was looking for.
Jesus Christ.
It's unfathomable. That much money. Pat Mahomes got a lot of money. And, oh, Jesus. I just don't understand it.
Okay, so if my math is correct, and it is the 57.5 for the cap hit, that would mean his cap number would be 57.5. DeMarcus Lawrence's would be 25. Amari Cooper, 22. Zach Martin, 17. Tyron Smith, 14. Zeke, 13. Lael Collins, 12. That's the top end of their roster.
God.
So DeMarcus Lawrence has to go in all reality. He's going to be a cap casualty.
Man.
You would think so. I mean, but there's so many different ways to work the cap that I feel like they know something that we don't that's going to come out tomorrow or something like that that's all of a sudden going to have them below cap or whatever.
No way.
Well, I know that. But that's crazy to me that is even remotely possible with $18.5 million free dollars, basically, that they have to play with right now.
And DeMarcus Lawrence's cap number goes up to 27 in 22 and then 29 in 2023. And then his cap number in 2024 will be $3 million. So he's got to be the cap casualty on this team. Because you have to keep your offensive line, so Martin and Smith have to stay. Lael Collins has to stay. You need your receiver, so Amari Cooper is going to be there. You can't trade Zeke because you just committed to him.
And why would you want to anyway? When you give the man the ball and have a solid offensive line, he's by far the best in the business.
Oh, did this get interesting?
They have leveraged their future. They have screwed themselves into a corner so bad that they're going to come ask me to come out of retirement to play defensive back for them.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. We barely touched on it. They're half their secondary.
It will not be brought back. They can't. Now, what do they look like as far as the draft is concerned?
Okay, so Chidobe Awuzie, free agent.
Mm-hmm.
CJ Godwin, free agent.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Lewis, free agent. Xavier Woods, free agent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's also with Aldon Smith, free agent, although he's not going to be very expensive. No. Andy Dalton, probably not going to bring him back anymore.
All right,
Sean Lee. And Tyrone Crawford.
Lee has been very injury prone. I would, unfortunately, he's had an awful long run, 10, 11, 12 years, and lots of injuries in the last four. I would have to make him a cap casualty too. But here's what they've got. Round one, they've got the 10th pick. Round two, they've got the 44th. Round two, they've got the 60th. Round three, they've got the 99th. Round four, they've got the 114th and the 139th. Round five, 177. So they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 picks in the first five rounds. The first two, 177 players available in the draft. So they've got opportunity.
So at 10, just pencil in Patrick Surtain.
You'd have to. I mean,
They have to take the best corner available, and he should be available at 10. They have to take him. And then
if they're lucky, he's available at 10.
They might have to draft Surtain in the first, someone like an Asante Samuel Jr. in the second, and then a safety in the third.
Or just draft seven cornerbacks and just hope two of them hit. I mean,
man.
Because as of right now, Trayvon Diggs is under contract, obviously. He was their draft pick last year. Rashard Robinson is the other corner. Savion Smith and Deontay Burton. So out of all those guys, I've heard of one of them, and it's Trayvon Diggs. And then four safeties under contract. Donovan Wilson, who is their starting strong safety apparently last year. Mm-hmm. Reggie Robinson at free safety because Xavier Woods is a free agent. Darian Thompson, and then Stephen Parker. So they have to draft at least two corners and a safety.
Yeah, I mean, Surtain walks into the starting position.
Oh, he's QB. He's CB1.
He's got to be.
Yeah.
Now, here's the interesting thing that you always tend to forget when it comes to Dallas, because do you know Mike McCarthy's name hasn't been mentioned once here? Jerry does so much in front of all of his primary people. It doesn't matter. He's the master of his domain. Is this, I guess, Mike McCarthy, I don't know if he said anything. If this was, yes, let's leverage it. Let's go for it. This is our guy of the future. What's the return on that? What do you think McCarthy thinks of this move? Is this what he would have done?
No, because Mike McCarthy's looking at it going, yeah, is he a good quarterback? Yeah, I'd take him. But am I willing to pay him so much money to where I'm going to be handcuffed when it comes to positions of need on my team? And you got to remember, I was just thinking, we're all sitting here like, yeah, you take Patrick Surtain 10. But this is Jerry Jones, mind you. Remember, last year he drafted on his yacht away from everybody and said, do not tell me who to draft. I'm taking CeeDee Lamb.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they didn't need CeeDee Lamb last year.
No.
They didn't need a receiver, and they still win it.
But CeeDee Lamb's a hell of a player.
Oh, I know. Don't get me wrong. He's a hell of a player.
I'm just saying. He tends not to draft for need. He tends to draft for love of that player, regardless of position.
Yeah, and Jalen Waddle's right there at the 10th spot, too. I mean, who knows? He's a loose cannon when it comes to the draft board anyways.
He can't be so stupid to not take Surtain or a corner at 10. I mean,
yeah.
There's no way he's that dumb.
I wouldn't bet on that. I really wouldn't. It's baffling to me. It is. I understand that you did not hear anybody scoff when Patrick Mahomes signed his deal. No one. No. Now,
if anything, he was underpaid.
I think people were shocked at the number just because we haven't seen that number before. I don't think it was a negative shock. I think it was like, oh man, that number exists in football. Holy crap.
Yeah, we
just got our first $40 million a year guy in baseball. Bauer.
Yeah.
Just became the first $40 million man. So, football is past baseball would never had.
And here you go. Dak Prescott, this is coming from Ian Rappaport. Dak Prescott deal averages $42 million over the first 3 years of his deal, $126 million guaranteed. So his first 3 years are fully guaranteed. That means the final year will be worth $34 million, which would be time to redo it. So that means he'll be making $34 million a year. And let's say he does play well. He'll be in his final year making 34, right? Ready to make another huge contract.
He'll be 31.
Yeah.
He'll be 31 the final year of his deal. But, okay, they have to win the division at least 3 of the 4 years, right? Like, that's got to be the ball.
Yes.
Got to.
Anything less than 3 division titles and at least 1 playoff victory in the next 4 years is a massive failure.
Yeah, you've got to dominate that division right now. When you had Washington with a losing record win it last year, you've got to be able to take it over or assume that's what you're going to do. But they had better draft well. They better draft well and hope that their new players that they pick up, if they draft for the right positions, can step in and perform.
Not many times
you can pick a Leighton Vander Esch, throw him in there, and he comes all pro right out of the gate.
That's very true. No, that's true. They got lucky. They got real lucky, and you know they need lightning to strike 5 or 7 more times next year. But
yeah,
I mean, could you imagine the world where they win 1 division title and no playoff games in the next 4 years?
Yeah, I could see it.
It's very possible. I mean, the team, honestly, if we're going into next year, in my opinion, the team to beat is the football team.
Yeah.
It's so hard not to stay in it, Chris.
I know.
It is so hard. It really is. I grew up up there. It's very hard. I can't do it. I got to think.
They have arguably the best front 7 in football. All of them coming back.
Sure.
Except for potentially Kerrigan, which you've heard his name's rumbling as a, you know, cap casualty trade candidate because he's getting up there in age. If Taylor Heinicke can play like he played in the postseason game, which he's more than capable of. I mean, he played against the Super Bowl champs and gave them the best game as a whole, offense and defense.
In the playoffs.
They gave the Bucks the best game.
Yep.
They need a couple skill position players, but they're obviously the favorites in that division going next year. Personally, I think. Because we've seen that front 7 causes mayhem and defense wins you championships.
Yep.
So they have to, in my opinion, for this deal to be a success, in my eyes, because other people are going to say, oh, you have to win a Super Bowl. I think with a deal like this, you have to be pushing for a Super Bowl. Like, you have to be pushing for it. You need to be either in the Super Bowl or in the NFC title game.
Okay, so here's a positive spin from what just happened, right? Because I feel like a lot of this has been negative. Valid, but negative. The positive thing is everybody knows, the world included, Jerry has said our window is the next 4 years.
Yep.
And everybody knows it. So at least we're all on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
That's the positive that I have out of this. Is Dak a $40 million quarterback? No. I think there's like 3 $40 million quarterbacks in the league, and Dak is not one of them.
Yeah. Well, deadlines make deals, and that's what happened here.
No kidding. I mean, but let's go back to it, and let's not sleep on good job by Dak's agent.
Oh, yeah. Holy, who is his agent?
Yeah.
That's just, I mean.
Props to him.
Yeah. When I heard, like I said, I didn't flinch at Mahomes. When I heard Bauer, I didn't flinch at that. There are sometimes you just jump out of your going, who was thinking? And I'm not just being disrespectful to him or his abilities. I love the kid. He is a solid NFL quarterback. But $40 million a year? Who truly is worth $40 million a year?
Okay,
somebody is winning you Super Bowls 3 out of 4 years.
Yeah. His agent is Todd France. He's signed with – he left CAA, which is like the huge media firm in California that gets like all the movie stars. He's the world's number 2 NFL agent. Last year alone on his agent commissions, he made $44.1 million.
Good for him.
He has 69 clients. His portfolio is $1.5 billion in contracts. His agency's Athletes First, and his major clients, Dak Prescott, Grady Jarrett, Fletcher Cox, Aaron Donald.
Aaron.
Aaron and Dak. Here you go.
Dak. So
that's a huge chunk of his portfolio right there between those two.
Yeah.
Good for him, and good for Dak for getting his money. It is now locked in. It's secured. It's not a franchise tag. He doesn't have to worry about anything. It is locked in for at least the next 3 years. Props to him for getting that deal done. But that is an insane deal that should have never been done.
Yeah,
sure. But
good for him.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, good night.
Yeah. All right. Well, God, I'm done wrestling with this. I want to see the fallout of it, and I think the true fallout comes in the draft. We'll see. If they do the right thing and they hit on a couple of these draft picks, they may be okay. But if they don't, the leveraging of the future has occurred.
I mean, the fallout comes when we start hearing their cornerbacks and their defensive backs' names going to other teams.
Yeah, okay. I can't play here now.
So here's my question, and this is something for everybody to chew on.
Fire away.
What the hell does Lamar Jackson's contract look like?
Ugh.
Because they have been working on his contract recently, and there were reports on they were waiting to see what Dak got.
Oh, Lamar just did a backflip in the middle of his living room.
Because I don't care what anybody says. Lamar Jackson is a damn good quarterback. Sure. I think people forgot how good he was because he had a somewhat down year last year. He's better than Dak.
Yeah.
He's more, I don't want to say he's more valuable to Dak, but he's more valuable to Dak, realistically. Because you take Lamar out of that team, who does what he does?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they had a down year, and he had a down year, and they went 11-4.
And, I mean, he was 11-4, 64% of his completions, 2,757 in yards, 7.3 an attempt, 26 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. And that's just passing. I mean, his rushing was, let's see, last year he had 1,005 yards for 7 touchdowns.
Yeah. Turns out he's good at the football.
So what does his contract look like?
I mean, it's got to be. God, I mean, he's got to be at the 40 mark, right? Like that's the new market now.
I think he goes for 42 because currently he's making $1.3 million. So I think he goes for the 42 mark.
But he's not worth 42, just like Dak's not worth 40.
Lamar more so is worth 40 than or 42 than Dak.
But his numbers might say I'm better than Dak Prescott, but that doesn't make you the second pass. I just the inequity is crazy. It and just now, doesn't add up to me.
Agreed. And now it's just market. It's just what is the market deeming
the market's gonna pay.
But it takes one product or person to screw the market up, and that was Patrick Mahomes. Was he worth it? 100%. Nobody will argue against that. But he was the thing that screwed the market up. And now it's got to reset. Or now it has to figure out where it's gonna land and turn and you know it's gonna land at the 40 number. And well, that's what it's gonna be.
And here's one thing that we have not even spoken about with Dak Prescott. He had a gruesome injury last year.
Yes, he did.
So you are now paying this guy this much money, mm-hmm. not knowing what he's coming back as.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point. I would assume that there have been a lot of workouts behind closed doors before or something.
Workouts are different than the game, though.
Right. What maybe not. Yeah.
What do huge contracts tend to do with the individual who obtains them the very next year? I'd say 1 out of 8 perform to the level commensurate of that contract. Most of them are like, it's on easy street now. My window of opportunity was open. I capitalized on it. Now I'm just going to play. Whatever happens, happens. I got guaranteed money. That's the one thing I hate. That's why things, as far as athletics, more of it needs to be incentivized. It needs to be tied to production because if you don't produce, you shouldn't be guaranteed the money. But all these agents and everything now are seeing that the contracts are being guaranteed and more are getting guaranteed money. And I just think it bad policy, it bad for business. But
I mean, here's a report from February 8th. He just had a second surgery on his injured ankle to help strengthen it.
Oh, boy.
Like, this was literally a month ago he had this surgery.
Yeah.
To strengthen his ankle, because the first one didn't do what they thought they would.
That is insane.
They said that it was nothing went wrong with the first surgery, but this one was to strengthen his ankle and to speed up his recovery.
I mean, let's hope they sped it up.
Well, Christ.
Let's move on from signing one quarterback to letting one go in the same division. Sure. Alex Smith, comeback player of the year, has been amicably, what they say, amongst each other, released by the Washington football team. Head coach Ron Rivera puts out his statement saying, I had a chance to meet with Alex Smith this week, and we had a very honest conversation, a real discussion. He had the chance to reflect on the 2020 season and talk about moving forward into next year. After the conclusion of the meeting, we decided that it would be best for both parties to move on, and we'll be granting Alex his request to be released. I want to thank Alex for his contributions this past year. He made such an impact on our young roster, and his leadership was one of the key factors in the late season success in making the playoffs for us the first time since 2015. Everybody here in Washington wishes Alex and his family the best going forward and appreciate all that he gave our organization.
I think that just means that Alex wants to try and be a starter, and
Washington wants to make him a starter. $14.9 million.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's, you know, I don't think anybody's wrong in on this side. I think Washington has the ability to go make some noise. And they want that 14.9 to go do that. And Alex wants a chance to go be a starter, and just wasn't going to work out there.
I mean, this was not a surprise, right, fellas?
No.
Not a surprise.
And like you said, that 14.9 million could be used to go, I don't know, sign someone like a Chris Godwin.
Yeah.
They need another big play receiver. You got Heinicke on a very friendly contract. That's when most of these, as you've seen over the years, that's when most of these Super Bowl wins occur, is when a stud quarterback is on a very friendly quarterback. Now, I'm not saying Heinicke's a stud quarterback. He's had one very, very, very good game in the league. True. But that small contract allows for the rest of the team to be filled out. So,
yeah, absolutely. It could also allow them to go sign all of the secondary of the Dallas camp.
There you go. And that would be the biggest middle finger to Dallas.
Mm-hmm. Now, where do you see Smith landing? Alex Smith is a very pragmatic young man. He has had a very good, very good career, even in regard to the way things have happened to him at each of his stops. Same thing happened in San Francisco that happened to Kansas City that has happened here, except the traumatic injury was here in Washington. Do you think Alex Smith, I think he was pretty congenial about it because the writing's on the wall, come back from that catastrophic injury, 14.9 against the cap, solid defense, we need to move a little. We all saw it coming. But do you think his drive is to be a starter, to go somewhere on a cap-friendly contract and mentor and be ready to come in whenever needed? Or do you think he even plays at all? And just potentially, I think he'd be a great coach.
I think there are two places that would fit him the best. The first one, if he wants to start, would be the Saints. You go down there with Sean Payton, and that could be very good for him. You know, Sean Payton's an incredible offensive mind, as we've seen over the past 10, 12 years. But I think, honestly, the best position for him is to go to Jacksonville. And we all know the Jags are taking Trevor Lawrence at one. Their head coach is Urban Meyer, who coached Alex Smith at Utah. That is a perfect veteran to mentor Trevor, teach him the ways of being a pro, both on and off the field, which won't be hard for Trevor. But it's also having another coach in the room with your franchise for the rest of his, you know, for the molding years of his career.
And then lock him in as a coach thereafter.
Yeah, and then it fits right in. He's Urban Meyer 2.0. He's a coach right then and there. He's the quarterback's coach, assistant offensive coordinator, whatever it may be. Right. I think Jacksonville is the perfect place for him to be.
That's an incredible fit, Chris. You're right.
I think if I mean, I agree with Chris, if he's not looking to find a starting position, I would say that if you go through and look at the teams and you find a place where he could actually compete as a starter, I think we'd all probably land on the same three teams that isn't New Orleans, who Chris has pointed out. Carolina, right? Could he step in and compete as a starter there? Sure. Denver, could he step in and compete as a starter there?
I think so too.
And the last one, we don't know what Belichick's doing. Could he step in and be a starter in New England? Possibly.
Yeah. I think you're going to see wherever he chooses, it's going to be very weather dependent, especially with that leg.
Spark. Yep.
Because spark. You don't want to be slipping, sliding, playing in mucky, nasty weather where that leg can give out easily. That's why I think the Saints is such a good pick. Mm-hmm. You're playing in a dorm. You're playing in a dome.
Yeah.
You play Atlanta in a dome.
Yeah.
You play Tampa in 80 to 90 degree weather year round.
Mm-hmm.
And then you play Carolina, which is normally nice weather, but I mean, it can get cold, but you're not going to be playing in snow and bitter cold.
No colder than Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that I think that's a really good point.
I think weather's going to play a big factor.
It'd have to.
Yeah, I mean, that eliminates a lot of, you know, I think weather could definitely be a factor for him. I would say right now, if I had to guess, right, if we had to guess what happens, he tests the water as a starter with a lot of teams, but ultimately I think he signs a nice deal for him to go be a backup / fringe starter if something happens somewhere.
You know, I think what he's experienced in his past, all through his career, I think he wants to go somewhere where he's comfortable, wanted, and has an opportunity to play. I think those three are three of the critical things. Sounds like I'm talking about Bryce Harper, doesn't it? But mm-hmm. Alex Smith, I really think that, and the more and more Chris and I have talked about the Jacksonville situation, the more and more it fits. It's just a perfect scenario for him right now. Not a landing spot, but a perfect destination for him. It really is. It's not. I think he could be a tremendous mentor to Trevor Lawrence, if not even start half the season.
Yeah,
until Trevor's fully aware of the playbook.
I mean, of course, I said if he wants to start, go to the Saints. Writing and penciling in stone that if Trevor gets picked one, he starts all year. You're just assuming that because he doesn't really need to be. He's not a project quarterback. He's a plug right in. He's going to play. But, I mean, hell, if Urban wants to go, you know what? We're going to take it slow with him. And if they do get Alex Smith, that's a perfect quarterback to have for the first 6 weeks of the year. So, who knows?
Yep.
Yeah, agreed. I hope he finds somewhere to land. He had such a good story last year, such a good run. I want to see him keep it going. Obviously, if it's his health is number one, but we want to see him keep trying to play if he can.
Yep. I am not one to necessarily go out and jump on a jersey to buy a jersey of an athlete unless it's my absolute favorite player. But I went out of my way to go find an Alex Smith jersey, the jersey he wore. The throwback jersey he wore that game he was injured. The old burgundy with the old, well, I can't say the logos, you know, the old logo patches on the side. Because that kid typifies to me what a professional should be. And the perseverance he showed and what he's gone through, he's just an amazing young man as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
Agreed. He would have to go blow up the White House for me to hate him. He would really have to do that. What I still, yeah. He'd have to do something along analogous to that, you know.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
All right, guys, let's jump out of the NFL because God knows Dak Prescott is just taking all the money. And let's talk about, we had a lot of UFC going on this weekend.
Yeah.
Great card. Chris and I got to watch the whole card. It was fantastic. Let's start with Dominic Cruz. First comeback win in what, last 5 years for Dominic? And he fought Kenny, I believe, up-and-coming kid, pretty mm-hmm. solid, and won that bout. Didn't look bad. didn't look overwhelmingly terrific, but he was solid. He looked very good for the layoff that he's had. What do you guys think of Cruz?
Yeah, his last two fights against Henry Cejudo, he lost knees and punches. That one was kind of controversial, if I remember correctly, because he might have been stopped a little early, but he wasn't.
And then he lost, no slouch.
And then he lost to Cody Garbrandt by decision in UFC 207. So he hasn't won a fight since June 4th, 2016.
Wow.
So he's had a long layoff of winning, per se. Right. He looked good. Dom's a very – I mean, he's one of the – you got to say he's got to be up there in all-time rankings when it comes to a bantamweight of all time.
Sure.
I mean, this win takes him to 23-3. So he looked good. He looked really good. I like him in the booth, what he brings to the booth. I do. I think he still has some fight left in him. Do I think he could be a title contender? No, because he did take a lot of damage in this fight against Casey Kenney.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most interesting thing that came out of this fight is the post-fight press conference.
Yeah.
When he was talking about this Monster Energy exec that's like handcuffing them and making them do all these posts with them to get money and get their contracts and everything. And Joe Rogan kind of had to move it along really quickly because UFC signed a huge deal with Monster recently. So,
right. Yeah, you brought that up.
Yeah. So,
I think Dana diffused that pretty well in the post conference too. He made a really good attempt at separating the company versus that one weird dude. And Dana's also gone off on him on like Instagram posts and stuff before. Like he's not well liked in the UFC, that individual. However, the company and what they're paying these fighters is very well loved and accepted. That guy's just weird, apparently. But I think Cruz is one of those guys that you just always enjoy seeing back in the ring. I'm glad that he won. I'd be interested to see how far he can carry the momentum of this win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's got quite a substantial record because some of the best fighters in UFC, one of the best fighters I've seen is George St. Pierre. His record is 26-2. And Dom's what, 23-3?
23-3, yep.
That is a hell of a record to carry through UFC. Stipe, 19-3. Okay. Randy Couture is not even close. He's 19-11 all time.
Right.
Jose Aldo, 28-7. Now, Khabib's 28-0. Without your legs, you can't do anything. He takes some legs away. John Jones, 26-1. This kid is right in there as far as his record.
That should be 27-0, too. Yeah,
should be 27-0.
Because the 12-6 elbow where he got disqualified was BS, and Dana's actually had tried to go out of the way multiple times to get that taken away, but they just won't do it.
Yeah. So that record puts him in top all time, in the tops all time in the UFC. He is a solid guy as far as in the ring. And like Chris was saying, on the mic, he's pretty good. He's pretty good. He will be a good color commentator.
Him and the bad guy have been the best crossovers from fighters to personalities.
Yeah. I do like Paul Felder a lot.
Felder is good. You're right.
DC is very good too. I can't say I don't hate DC. I love DC on the mic. He's some of the stuff he comes up with.
He cracks me up.
Yeah. He'll joke during the card too, which brings a little light to it. But he also is one of the greatest fighters of all time. So he brings a lot of insight.
Yeah. His mind is just different when you get him going on stuff for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But Dom's up there as one of the better, commentators in the game.
Yep.
And here recently as well in the UFC, guys, they announced the release of Dos Santos and Overeem from the UFC. What do you think of Alistair Overeem and Junior Dos Santos being released?
Doesn't surprise me one bit.
Why not?
JDS is not the fighter he used to be. Getting up there in age, if I'm not mistaken, he's up in the northern 30s, if I'm not mistaken. He is 37 now. His last four fights, he's been TKO'd by punches. As a matter of fact, the one against Cyril Gane and Rosenstruck and Blades and Ngannou, I watched all of them, and he did not look good in any of the fights.
No.
He does have a win over Stipe Miocic in his career back in 2014. It was a decision. He has some incredible wins in his career. You know, he's beaten the likes of Frank Mir, Cain Velasquez, Roy Big Country Nelson, Mirko Krokop, Stefan Struve, Verdum. He's beaten a who's who of people, but he's not the same fighter he was. It's just that simple. He's been on the downturn, and with the heavyweights that are in that division right now, he would just continue to be a whooping boy, and I don't think you want to see that. I think Dana realizes, you know, look, this guy's a legend. I don't want him to get pummeled for the next 3 years until he's 40, and everybody remembers him as the old guy who can't fight.
Is Dana White not the best leader in his sport?
Yes.
100%. It's not even close.
I think so. Because I love his candor. And here's what he said about this. He said, nothing behind the scenes happened. They're both great guys who've had incredible careers. First of all, people get cut here every week. Mm-hmm. I think those two are pretty self-explanatory. There's nothing negative. It's just part of the sport. If you look up and see what they've done recently, you look at their age, you look at everything that's going on, it's pretty self-explanatory. That's his explanation. And he's 100% correct. He's not pulling any punches. No pun intended. But it's the man tells the truth in this industry. That's why he's so successful.
Yeah.
He's not trying to hide from anybody.
And you know, Overeem, too, he hasn't been the same since he was Alistair Overeem. When, let's just say, the drug testing wasn't as stringent. If you don't know what I'm talking about, type in Alistair Overeem against Brock Lesnar. And Brock Lesnar's a big man. Go look at that weigh-in and look what Overeem looked like, and then come back and tell me he's not on something. But he hasn't looked that great recently either. In his last 2, 4, 6 fights, he's won 4 and lost 2. But he's not a dominant threat that he once used to be in the heavyweight division. Again, he is 40, so you know.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Just up in age, I would say that I wouldn't be as shocked if Dos Santos was released as a fighter but kept on as something else around the UFC, because he's a guy that obviously Dana has a great relationship with, and would be very smart for any MMA company to keep him around in some form or fashion. I wouldn't be shocked if something like that was a deal behind the doors as well with that.
Yeah, he'd be a good liaison to Brazil and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, not shocking.
Not shocking at all. No. So let's get to the big things that went on this week in UFC. Adesanya loses his first fight, but he loses to light heavyweight champion Jan Blachowicz. Did I say his last name correctly?
Yes.
Yeah.
This kid's, man, I like that kid. I like Jan. Like, I don't think he gets a lot of the credit he should, but I think this fight should make him a lot more of a talking point now. He is terrific. Yes, is he the bigger man? He certainly is. He outweighed him at the weigh-in by 10 pounds, 15 pounds, 215,
9 pounds,
pounds, because Adesanya came in at 201.5 pounds. So, you know, it's arbitrary, but I mean, they're different in build. He is by far the larger man, but he looked good against Adesanya, and he is supposed to be, and I wonder where this does to his, you know, the style bender persona, his, what people say about him being the greatest of all time. What does this do to Adesanya?
So this is really interesting, because on Twitter, I have now found out that Adesanya was an incredible specimen, all-time fighter, should be fighting John Jones, you know, an athlete in his own right, of a generational talent. And then he loses to Jan, and now he's a paper champion with a glass jaw that was handed everything.
No.
Who doesn't deserve the likes of anybody. And it's just very interesting to watch. And again, all of this is coming from Twitter. So
Twitter.
Granted, we take everything with a grain of salt that comes from there. I get that. But it's just so interesting to watch people not stick behind somebody when they took a loss.
It's
like John Jones has a loss. Granted, everybody knows it's crap, but there's still a loss in his record, on his career. Like, it's still there. It's okay to lose. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah, it's funny. You can tell who watches fights and who doesn't. I've been watching UFC now probably going on 15, 16 years. Israel Adesanya, outside of John Jones, is the most talented fighter I've ever seen. He, any facet of the game he excels in, and he's gotten better from when he first showed up at around, or when he first came on the scene in 2018 to now. I mean, the jump has been insane, and he was good in 2018. He's incredible now. This does nothing to anything with him. Him and his camp going into this fight said, we shouldn't be the favorite. This is a step up to a new division. This is a measuring stick. This is a test for us. This is to see if we're ready to make that jump. He purposely went in, didn't add the weight because he didn't want to lose the speed and lose his, basically what makes him him. I think if you ask him now, he would probably say, I probably should have put on about another 5-7 pounds. But this doesn't do anything to him in the eyes of true fight fans. This was a guy who said, you know what? I'm going to put my balls on the line and I'm going to go up a division. I'm going to see if I can do it. He fought well. Personally, to me, Błachowicz didn't do anything that stood out to me that was like, wow, he blew him away. He mopped the floor with him. He's a bigger man. And he laid on him for, you know, two rounds at the end, rounds 4 and 5. He had a good round in round two. Going into round 4 and 5, I had it 2-1 Adesanya. So Błachowicz had to do something, but he didn't dominate him as people would make you think.
Chris, I want you to clarify that he laid on him. Did he just lay on him, or did he not use his strengths and what he's good at to capture that win?
Well, when I say he laid on him, Błachowicz is he's proficient on the ground. He's very proficient on the ground. He ground and pounds the crap out of people. He didn't until round 5 with like 6 seconds left of the round. He didn't go full mount and start throwing ground and pound and elbows. For the most of the time, he was taken away. You know, he was taken away Adesanya's ability to stand up with him. He'd take him down. He would drain him of his injury. He'd throw a couple shots to the ribs, maybe try to throw a shot to the head. Nothing was really devastating. Nothing was really hitting. But he was draining the injury, he was sapping Adesanya of the energy. Like I said, it wasn't like a Khabib where he takes you down and then slowly dismantles you. It was more of I'm 20 pounds heavier than you probably at this point, if not more. I'm going to take you down. I'm going to take you to the deep waters, and I'm going to make you get up and fight me the way you want to, because that's their best chance of win. I'm not saying Błachowicz is a bad fighter. I like him a lot, but he didn't impress me as I thought he would and could in this situation.
But don't forget either that Adesanya's hallmark is the fact that he is so is awkward, a good unconventional in his style, that he makes anybody not look their best. Anybody, yeah, because of his style.
I agree. And he got a good taste, you know, like everybody said, of him going up. He's going to go up again. It'll probably be a different result the next time he goes up there. This was awesome to see. It was good to see somebody that is willing to get out of their weight class and move up to go try and fight somebody else. That was just refreshing to see, you know, and then everything else that Chris said, Adesanya is still going to go down as one of the best fighters we'll see, right?
Yeah.
At the very least in our lifetime. And that's at the minimum.
Yeah. It's not as if Israel Adesanya went up in weight class and got destroyed. He wasn't outclassed. It wasn't as flashy of a fight as I thought it would be. There weren't as many big moments as I thought there would be, but it was a good, solid win by Jan. Really was.
Absolutely.
And that's what he had to do to win. And he had a very, very tough, elusive opponent to beat.
Absolutely.
And how many times, guys, Ronda Rousey, how many times do you see some fighter, a championship fighter, go into the fight and adapt their fight game to the other person's style, much to their detriment? If Ronda Rousey had stuck to what she did the best, she may still be champ until Nunes came along. But right. if Blachowicz had have tried to beat Adesanya at his own game, he would have lost this fight. He had to be him, and he did.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Jan did everything he needed to do.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
he had to do to take the title.
Yep. Just mentioned Nunes. So let's talk about her. Is she the best champion that UFC has ever seen? Do you think she'll go down as the greatest champion UFC has ever seen?
She's making it extremely hard every time she throws a punch to say no.
It's tough to argue against that. You look at the people she's beaten over the career. You know, your Ronda Rousey's, your Holly Holmes, your Megan Anderson's now. She's beaten some good names. She's the most dominant champion the UFC will ever see. I don't think she will go down as the greatest champion the UFC has ever seen. I think someone like Daniel Cormier's got an argument against that. John Jones has got an argument. Stipe Miocic. Khabib. It's tough for me to say she could be the greatest because the quality around her in her division, she's walked through. And she'll walk through anybody above her and below her. Whereas, I'm not taking anything away from her. That's just how much better she is than everybody else. So
she's going to have a problem finding fights now, is she not?
No one's going to want to fight her. No one should want to fight her. If I were someone who had to fight her, I would say, you're going to pay me what I would make if I won just to step in with her.
She's got the belts at 135 and at 145. So she's just going to have to keep moving up. And I'm not sure I'm not sure how far up she's going to go before somebody's there to actually stop her because of everything that she can do. You know, everybody questions one thing and she comes out and does it, right? Everybody with Megan was like, Megan's the next one. She's the next one up. She's so much longer. She's so much bigger than Nunes is. How will she handle that big of a size difference, right? That kind of reach, all that kind of stuff. Nunes goes out and does exactly what she's going to do. And her case is being helped by the fact that she is the owner of two weight class belts right now. So that will help her argument of going down as one of the greatest champions of all time because she's defending both right now.
And she's 145, 135 champ. She can't go up. There's not a class above 145. She's not going to cut 20 pounds to go down to 125. So she's just going to wait for somebody to come up. If anybody were to come up to her, they're going to get destroyed because they're going to have to put on weight to even make the weight to fight her. And she's just going to pick them apart. She won't lose until she wants to just say, I'm done.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is, I totally agree with you. The only other thing she would have to do is find some sort of 130 catchweight area that enough girls from 25 are willing to come up and meet her at. That's the only way I would think right now.
I think
run through everyone.
I think the only fight that has a chance at being intriguing is Valentina Shevchenko. Other than that, there's nobody in either division that can come close to her. I thought this was going to be her toughest test.
Sure.
Megan and if people don't watch UFC a lot, Megan Anderson is a badass.
She is
one of the best women's fighters out there. She is completely well-rounded.
Yeah.
And that just shows you the difference between the best women's fighter of all time and someone who's damn good at their job.
Sure. Amanda's only 31 years old. How is she going to be able to make a living because nobody's going to want to fight her?
People will go after her because it's the big money fight. That's what will keep her fighting is people will go, all right, you know what? We always say this, one punch can change a life and combat sports. So they're going to go, all I got to do is land one. So they're going to go after her for, I'm going to be the co-main or main event on this card. One punch can change my life. So that's what's going to keep her going in the fighting. So
do you think the fact that she does not dodge, duck, politic, get out of anybody's way. She does not change her style. She imposes her will and wins convincingly every time. Makes her great.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. I mean, who in the hell do you know who is submitting a fighter with both a triangle choke with your legs and an arm bar at the same time? You're either going to get your arm snapped in half or you're going to get choked the F out.
That was the most beautiful thing I had seen. I mean, she had that triangle around the head. She couldn't let go of one and done the other. It wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah.
She had her in such a problematic spot. And like you said, Megan's a stud.
Mm-hmm.
She is a stud fighter. Long, lanky, solid, technically sound, on top, on the ground, on her feet, everything. Great striker. Puh. Amanda made it look fairly easy.
I think, and some people will scoff at this, I think the next logical fight for Nunez, other than Shevchenko, would be a rematch with Megan Anderson. And people will say, well, why? She just kicked her, you know, kicked her rear end in 2 minutes and 3 seconds. Well, now Megan Anderson's been in there with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now she knows, okay, now I know, I knew I was going in there with, now I've been in there with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because honestly, she, other than Shevchenko, she's the only person that gives Nunez any sort of problem. Yeah. And the problem is just her being so long that now that she knows what she's dealing with, maybe in the next go around, she can prevent, you know, present a bigger challenge.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see anything other than, yeah, I mean, I'm with you.
All right, guys, let's move out of the fight game and move into NCAA basketball and talk about Greg McDermott, coach of Creighton. Got suspended recently for a comment that he's made. What are we doing? What are we doing to where we're so – not that it's right, not that it's wrong, not that it's indifferent. There are a lot of things you shouldn't say. Let's put it this way. But – can you pick apart somebody's statement and turn it into something you want it to be if you beat on it hard enough? There are so many things that are being said nowadays that people just jump on and then say there are undertones of this and undertones of that when this song or this word or this statement was made in complete honesty in a completely different way, and then somebody takes it and twists it. Is this very prevalent in our society today? To me, it is. What do you guys think?
This is a tough look, right? Like, you could have said almost any other word.
Yes, true.
You could have said,
chose the wrong word. He did.
You could have said the boat. You could have said in the locker room, I need you to stay in the, you know, in the bubble here, I need you to stay. You know what I mean? Like, you could have taken any other coach speak.
Yeah, keep it in our house.
Keep it in the house. Keep it in the family. I don't need anybody leaving the family right now. Like,
right.
You could have done any of that. And
yeah, but what prompted him to say it that way?
That's a great question. I don't know. And the tough part is like, the kids have spoke up about it. They're not necessarily bashing McDermott as a person. They're uncomfortable with what he said and how he said it and how it was portrayed. And some of the black kids on the team were taking a little offense to that too. Go ahead, Chris.
But inherently with them taking offense to what he said, doesn't that make them take offense to him as a person?
No,
because if you have a problem with what somebody says, you're going to say, whoa, you can't, like, come on, dude. What type of person are you to say that? Whereas if it wasn't, I feel like if they didn't have a problem with him as a person, you wouldn't even be hearing about it because they'd be like, oh, you know, coach doesn't mean anything like that. He just said the wrong word.
I don't know. I think you can call attention to something that somebody said without calling attention to the person as a whole. Like, we've all said dumb stuff. We've all said some dumb
things. We forever will.
So except it's not.
There was one guy who didn't, and he walked on water.
He did. Just one guy.
So, you know, absolutely. And I think that the tough part is like, obviously they're going to look into what he said, how he acted, right? There's things that now Creighton has to deal with as a school looking into McDermott. On the other side of this, these kids are the second seed in the Big East. They have an opportunity to walk into the Big East championship tournament and win it, giving themselves a solid look at a high seed going into March Madness. And now they're you know, being skippered by their assistant, which since the assistant has stepped in, I think he's like 2-0 or something like that. Or they haven't played yet. I'm sorry. That's tough for the kids too. But I also, there's another side to this where should we be not like, should we like degrading, but can we look at this as a way to applaud kids that felt uncomfortable in a situation and had, and were able to feel like they could say something about it?
I think that's easy nowadays in this social media, politically correct world that we live in. I think that's easy. Do I like the fact that kids will stick up for themselves and stand up and say something? Yes. And the funny thing is, it's just the selection of that word. Why that word at this time in the volatility of what's going on in our society now over the last few years? And I've always been a proponent of one thing. You will never eradicate anything like this, be it racism or sexism or anything, until you can eradicate ignorance. And you can't. You just can't eradicate ignorance. And why did the word plantation have to come out of his mouth?
I mean, Creighton is in Nebraska, so maybe.
And he's a mid-American guy. He's from Iowa. It's not like he's from Mississippi or Alabama or one of the southern states where plantations were very prevalent. Where'd the word come from?
Why'd
it come out?
It was just an unfortunate term because, I mean, I just typed in plantation and like 16 things pop up that are in Florida, like Plantation Palms Golf Club.
Yeah.
So it's like that term is out there in the world with a completely different meaning of what it once was. Let's not forget that. It's not like he said something extremely egregious. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah.
It's tough. You never know what he was thinking. I'm sure he didn't mean anything by it.
Let's hope.
Well, here's the good news. Creighton has reinstated McDermott, so he will be on the sidelines. He's back.
That's good.
The Creighton, you know, the head, the AD, and the president have come out and said that McDermott immediately apologized when it came out. He took ownership. McDermott and the team sat behind closed doors and had multiple difficult conversations with each other.
Good.
To figure out whatever they needed to figure out. It doesn't matter to us, right? That doesn't need to be public. We don't care, right? We know that they sat behind closed doors and they had conversations that they needed to have for whatever reason. They came out of those conversations. The team accepted McDermott because they like him, and they accepted his apology because they know who he is. It was just kind of a tough one-off. They've forgiven him. They've done everything they need to do on their end. They relayed that to the front, to the head of Creighton. Creighton has accepted what the players have said. Creighton has now reinstated Coach McDermott, so he will be back coaching on the players, you know, at the behest of the players.
Good. And Chris was talking about the genesis of that word and whatnot and where it came from. I am from Virginia, born and raised in Virginia. I've been around a long time. And when I was a kid, that word had a completely different meaning, and it was in regard to affluence. You either lived in a shack, on a farm, or on a plantation. And plantation were the rich folks. Farm were the hard everyday working folks who get by, make a decent, solid living. And then the shack are the folks who are really having a tough time. So it was more of a monetary measurement back in the 60s and 70s. But now, because let's just face it, because we've never really addressed civil rights, have been going on since I was a kid. It's never been fully taken. I don't, eradication of ignorance. Can we do it? I don't think we can.
And I think it's good to also put out there, like, just because there was a plantation is an estate of which crops such as sugar, coffee, sugar, tobacco are cultivated by resident labor. That's the definition. And I think it's something to be said that just because there was a plantation doesn't mean it was associated with something else that, you know what I'm trying to say here?
Right.
I think it's, you know, the bad apple spoils the bunch, because there are tree plantations in Florida where you go and pick up palm trees.
Or Christmas trees.
Or Christmas trees. There's that is a, regardless, he probably shouldn't have said it, because it's just it's got a negative connotation to it, mm-hmm. even though it's technically not a negative word. It's not one of those words where you hear somebody say and you go, whoa.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
No, I get what you're saying. It does have that negative connotation to it. The good news is, should he have said it? Definitely not. There's 1,000 other coach words he definitely could have put in there. The conversation needed to be had, though. The conversation ultimately came out really well from everybody that from Creighton, which is the only, you know, news that we need to worry about is what's coming out of their own camp. Everybody there is in line. They all want McDermott back. They went to the heads of Creighton. Creighton brought McDermott back. Now he's there on the sidelines, and they have an opportunity to go win a Big East championship with a good team.
Yeah, real good team. 17-7 this year, 24-7 last year. So these guys are one of the few teams that seemingly COVID really hasn't devastated. COVID has done some serious things to some great teams around this country. And Creighton has hung in there and had two very, very solid years through all this stuff. So that says a lot about the team, the kids, the coach, the school. It says a lot about Creighton and what they're doing there.
Mm-hmm. I just now it clicked with me. That's Doug McDermott's dad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So it's more, and like you said, I think there are many, many more egregious words. It just, you know, that's a word I guess maybe you need to stay away from. Yeah, not a good. And if he had have been a habitual offender,
yeah,
he would not be reinstated as he has been now. I think this has gone by as an oops, essentially, and just watch your mouth.
Absolutely.
We are in a very sensitive time. Don't be saying things like that that might be construed as having some sort of racial undercurrent.
Yep.
Don't do it. I raised that boy right there to be colorblind, and he will forever in his life remain colorblind if he does not punch him in the face.
You're a good person. If you're a dick, you're a dick. I don't give a damn about anything else in your life. That's it.
Well, there is good people and bad people. Doesn't matter what you look like, good or bad. What are you going to be? All right, let's go to the NBA, fellas. Blake Griffin, a free agent after an agreed-upon buyout with the Detroit Pistons. Now, oh boy, he's at Brooklyn. What's going on in Brooklyn, fellas? Are these guys going to be tough to beat if they can be cohesive?
I believe the term we're looking for is ring chasing. Is that the appropriate word? Which, again, a phrase that has a negative connotation, which doesn't make any sense to me, because I thought that was the point of pro sports, is to win the rings. Anyways, whatever. I think that this makes sense, right? This makes sense for Blake to make this move. He's getting up there. He's not what he has been. He hasn't dunked in like 17 years or something like that, whatever that stat is, right?
Yeah, he hasn't dunked in a game since 2019.
Yeah, he's going to be a cheap amount of money for Brooklyn. If he can bring them 15 to 20 minutes a game, that will be incredible. That'll be exactly what Brooklyn needs. They don't need him to be what he was in, you know, with the Clippers. It gives them more depth. This just makes sense. I think this makes sense for everybody. I don't know if being like, oh, they added Blake, now they've got massive depth and they're definitely going to run through everybody. I'm not really there, but Blake doesn't hurt them, I don't think, in the long run.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
You know, he gave back $13.3 million of his buyout to the Pistons. He gave it back.
Idiot.
You know, the kid, he is no slouch. Have you ever heard a bad word about him? Have you ever heard a bad word come out of his mouth? You ever heard he's a bad teammate? Kid's from Oklahoma, played at Oklahoma, probably the best, one of the best Oklahoma basketball players to ever come out. I love the kid. I love Blake Griffin. Tremendous player. And I think he's going to, I don't think he's going to be a role player. I think he's going to give them significant minutes. He's not going to play 40. He's going to give them significant minutes and he's going to do the things he has to do to help them win.
Absolutely.
I think it's a great addition.
Yeah. And he stretches the floor so he can get out of the way of Harden and Kyrie.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he can just can't leave him alone. Yeah. And he can set up well for Durant.
Okay.
He does exactly what they need him to do.
And he's already got the cohesion with DeAndre Jordan. So,
sure.
All right, Adam Silver, leader of the NBA. He is not mandating vaccines for players. Does this give you pause? Cam, what do you think?
This one's weird because I never really thought about it until he said it. You know what I mean? It's one of those things you just don't really think about, and then he says it, and then you have to pause and go, wait a minute, what? You have, you know, the CDC is now saying that anybody that's been vaccinated can gather in rooms unmasked with other vaccinated people. The CDC just came out today and said that. So if you're Silver and you want to get things moving along, if you urge, and I don't want to say mandate, right? That's not the word I want to use. But if you want to urge your players to be in a position to be role models for what needs to happen, right? If a lot of these NBA guys get vaccinated or go and get the shot, I feel like other fans and people would fall in line, which I feel like they have that kind of power, right, to them. It's weird, though. I don't think he can mandate anybody to get them, but I think he could definitely urge them to do so, that maybe if they all do it, we can get fans back in the stands a little bit quicker. I think that would be, if I'm Adam Silver and I want them to do it, that's probably my pitch.
Well, I know players have said if there's a mandate of getting the shot, I'm not playing. Right. Because even though the CDC has come out today and said, oh, well, if you're fully vaccinated, you can gather in a room with other fully vaccinated people without a mask. It's like, okay, but at the beginning of the pandemic, you were saying masks don't work. Now you're saying two masks work. There's also information about how the vaccines in people of a younger age causes infertility. There's also been people over in Europe who have gotten the vaccine and have had very severe problems from it and have passed away after taking the vaccine. I think this is a situation where the NBA should stay the hell out of the way, because you don't want to, let's say there is something with the vaccine, because I hope it works. I do. Mm-hmm. I really do. Because I'm sick and tired of this world that we live in right now. But let's say, because it was made in 6 months, which is unprecedented, let's say there's something where it doesn't work, and there could be something where it, you know, there's a higher percentage of long-term, you know, problems, whatever they may be, and the NBA comes out and goes, hey, everybody, this is perfectly fine. And then you got everybody going to take it, and then something were to happen. It's not a good look for them. I think Adam Silver just needs to say, if you're going to take the vaccine, cool. If not, so be it. We're still going to stick with our social distancing guidelines and our mask guidelines, and we're going to continue to go as we've been going.
Mm. Well, I think that's smart on his part myself, because you can't. I'm not going to have anybody mandate me to take the shot or not. And I'm significantly older than the both of you. I am in, for all intents and purposes, very good health for my age. I am not overly worried because I am being very, very safe. I don't think it's a huge issue in the NBA. I don't think it should be. You have elite athletes in there. The kids who get it, it shouldn't certainly be an overwhelmingly devastating issue. I know that it affects each individual differently. I know that it scared the snot out of Freddie Freeman in baseball. Mm-hmm. When he lost his smell, his taste, everything, he was scared. He was very scared. But, you know, these people are in the peak of physical fitness. I think that they're much more apt to survive without it than the general older public are. I don't think it should be mandated at all. I think it is entirely up to them to take it or not.
Yeah, I don't think you can mandate something like this, because there have been players that have come out before the season when it was being thrown around that, oh, the players are gonna, they're all gonna have to be it's a mandatory for them to take the vaccine if they want to play, and players are coming out saying, I just won't play.
Right.
Because I think we're still in that early stage of, like, we don't even still, realistically, there's still a lot of questions about COVID as a whole that no one knows. So now we have a vaccine. It's just like, if I was a player and it was told to me that you have to take it if you want to play, I wouldn't play. I feel like the risk outweighs the reward in this scenario. And I think them not mandating it is the correct thing to do.
Yep. All-star game, guys. LeBron James team wins. All of the proceeds for historically black colleges, which is a tremendous thing. I believe what was $450,000 will be contributed to the Thurgood Marshall College Fund for the HBCUs. Tremendous hunk of money on behalf of LeBron James' crew over Team Durant this past weekend. Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy the game? Did y'all watch it?
It was on above us when we were watching something else. I just think it's funny that everybody always said, oh, LeBron's, you know, wherever he's at, he's a GM. He's not just a player. Well, he's 4-0 as a general manager in All-Star games when he's drafting his team. So,
yeah, I don't know how he scored that starting five, but I have questions about Kevin Durant.
Well, and Kevin Durant's team didn't even win a quarter.
No.
Like, they didn't win a quarter. They didn't win a game. They didn't win anything.
No.
And they...
I think the best thing is Curry wins the three-point contest on a massive rally, which was fun to see. And then him and Dame have the shoot-off in the midst of the All-Star game, which is fun because I feel like there's a competition there that isn't there. It's like a media-driven competition, but I don't think there's like a hatred between Steph and Dame. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think there is. I think there's a media-driven thing. Some people think Dame's better than Steph. Some people think Steph's better than Dame, whatever. But it was fun to see them go at it. The NBA All-Star game is unnecessary and sometimes very lazy.
It's lost all its luster. I think we can all agree on that.
They brought a little bit of the luster back with the fourth quarter thing. I'll give them that.
It's much better than the Pro Bowl. I was in the Pro Bowl last year, guys. That's a waste of money.
I think the drafting of teams is kind of stupid, personally. I think it still should be Eastern Conference versus Western Conference. I remember as a kid, you'd go to your friend's house for All-Star weekend. You'd go over there Saturday to watch all the contests, the dunk contest, the three-point, the skills, all of that, and then Sunday you'd all gather up and go to somebody's house and watch the game.
Yep.
Now it's like I said, I had it on in the background, and I'd look up and go, oh, it was a deep three. I think it's lost its luster a little bit.
It has, definitely. I think the weekend as a whole has. I think the skills competition is still pretty fun. I think people enjoy that. I don't even want to go into the dunk contest because we just don't need to. That's unnecessary. But yeah, I think I like the drafting of the teams. I think it makes it more fun. It's more interesting. I think it's more player involved. Somebody said that they should have all the players walk out onto the court and the captain's pick right before tip-off.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be cool.
Just like doing the schoolyard.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. And I think that'd be cool. I also put forth that I think Peyton Manning and Derek Jeter should draft both teams and coach them while mic'd up, because I think that would just be fun and unnecessary. But it's not any more or less unnecessary than the All-Star game is right now. So
I think the only thing we took away from the All-Star game is that if LeBron and Steph Curry ever played on the same team, they would be the most dominant two-man to ever play basketball.
The world would cease to exist, yes.
Let's just say they were on the same team for the past 8 years, they'd probably win 7 titles. And I don't think it's a stretch of saying that.
I don't disagree with that at all, no. Because LeBron is very good about his role player pickings.
And Steph is the greatest shooter to ever walk the planet.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely.
He probably is. I think he's even better than Pistol Pete Maravich, and that kid could play some basketball.
No, he's there's no second. It's Steph and then everybody else. Like when the dude crosses half court, that's his range. Sometimes yep. behind half court is his range.
Sure.
That's just ugh.
Yep, crazy. But yeah, I think you know, I love that they're donating the money. I think that was really cool for them to see that, and some of the players there were wearing the jerseys of some of those schools, which I thought was pretty cool too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
But I look forward to Blake with Brooklyn. Love the kid, and yep. It's
yeah. Yeah, could definitely bring them more depth moving forward into the playoffs. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, guys, we're going to wrap this up.
All righty. Well, we appreciate you guys hanging in there with us. We can be found on Twitter at Sports Summit Pod. We're on shootingthesportsish.com. Chris can be found at NattyLights2822 on Twitter. I can be found on Twitter at CMSesStuff. And Coach can be found on Twitter by tweeting one of us and asking what he thinks. And then we'll ask him, and then he'll tell us to answer it.
They'll tweet for me.
Yeah, and then we'll tweet for him.
Not that I can't tweet, but they want to try to keep me socially acceptable, I believe.
Yeah, we have to keep a modicum of decorum.
Yes, just remember, responsible media.
Responsible media always. Apart from that, I think we're good here, and we will see you guys next week.
See you.